David Bohm Seminar Series 2, December 2nd, 1989. Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock session. Oak Grove School, Ojai, California.
Well, once again, I think it would be useful to begin with a few questions, try to think of not more than 10 minutes or... Or if there aren't any, then I can proceed. Well, we have been talking about a great many things. But one of the points that emerged in the last hour was that we are really, the intellect is always about a kind of map, you see, showing the structure, the relationship of things and so on. But it doesn't, in a sort of an abstract way, by representation, right? Rather than immediate presentation, right? We said that things are presented to us immediately and thought affects that. But thought also, and the intellect forms a representation, is that clear? And judgments enter into that. They also enter into the presentation. You see, if you're making a map, you must make a judgment. You draw a line, and you have to judge where does it belong, what's on one side, what's on the other, and so on. That line is an abstraction, right? The line between countries is an abstraction. The line on the map is an abstraction. So the two abstractions correspond if the lines are correct. So we can make a representation which in some way presents it again, but more abstractly, right? In thought or in a diagram, or an actor makes a representation of a character, and so on. And that, as I said, all thought becomes immediate. The representation then becomes presented immediately. The color is the way you see things, right? We've discussed that already, but I'm just repeating it.
Sort of forced to ask pretty soon, where does the thing that's being represented really lie?
Yes, well, we have to say that if we have a good representation, that it will lead, it guides action when it's presented to us. Our whole system is taking cues. And then if the action is coherent, we'll call it a good representation. See, if you have a map which is correct, right, it means that this will guide your action to go in a certain direction toward a certain city, and you expect to encounter one city before another, and so on. You see, if it all works coherently, we say that's the right map.
All we know is the abstract.
Yes, knowledge is abstract. That's not only all we know, but knowledge is intrinsically abstract. It's a whole structure of abstraction, right? The act of knowing is concrete, but knowledge, which is its product, is abstract. Do you see what I mean? Uh-uh. What? No, you see, is it clear that knowledge has got to be abstract?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the act of knowing is the concrete activity in which we're learning about it.
The process.
Now, the act of knowing is concrete, but the product is knowledge, which is abstraction. Knowledge forms a whole body of abstraction. It may fit together coherently or not. And we have a vast body of knowledge, right? Which we may mistake for reality if we're not careful.
How do you define your coherence?
Well, you see, again, these things can't be defined, but I can say some things about it. That to be incoherent means, first I'll talk about incoherence, it means that you're getting your intentions and your results don't agree. It means that you have contradiction. It means you have confusion. It means you have self-deception in order to cover it up, and so on. Your action is not in agreement with what you expect and all that. Now, some incoherence is inevitable because your knowledge is not perfect, right? All knowledge is limited because it's an abstraction. Only what you've learned up to this point, you've always, from the concrete, you've taken out something. The rest is infinitely more. So it's always limited. And therefore, it's going to be incoherent. That shows up as incoherence when it's applied, right? When you act according to it, or when you try to work it out. And then, if your attitude is good, you say, okay, I acknowledge the incoherence, I give up, I find out what's wrong, and I change it. But if you say, I defend this knowledge, then you're off on the wrong track. You see, that is, knowledge has no reason to be defended, but people are caught up in defending it all the time for reasons we'll have to go into later, next, perhaps tomorrow. But so you've got knowledge and so on. You see, that's abstraction, right? So where were we then? Coherence. You see, now we can say something positive about coherence. You see, we sense it as order, beauty, harmony. It's not, you know, it may make a mistake that way, but still, that's the positive sense of it. The negative sense is incoherence, right? Right, which is the road to coherence. So we need both. If somebody only looks at order, beauty, and harmony, he could easily start fooling himself and say it's all working, it's all orderly and harmonious and beautiful. But is sensitive to incoherence, so it begin acknowledging it and finding out and so on. Now, coherence is evidently a tremendous value to us, and it's got to be, because incoherent functioning is really very dangerous, right, to us. And in addition, we're sort of built so that we appreciate coherence, right? It's part of life. You know, if your life is totally incoherent, you might feel that it's hardly worth it, right? So we have a kind of sense of value built in, I think, and I think our values have got mixed up. You see, that through the whole thought developing over the ages, we have developed incoherent values which muddle us up, so we are not very clear on what is meant by any of this, right?
One of the things that gives these incoherent values such deep meaning is our desire for coherence.
Yes, well, if we have a desire for coherence, we can go about it wrongly and simply try to impose coherence, do you see, which is violence, right? Rather than discovering the incoherence and dropping it.
One might say coherence is innate.
Yeah, coherence is innate. The move to coherence is innate, but our thought has muddled it up. In memory, it's all on the program, a highly incoherent response. And we don't know how to get to it or what it means or anything. You see, it's gotten more tangled up as time went on.
So we end up really trying to find coherence in thought, rather than, we confuse coherence in thought with coherence.
Yeah, well, coherence in thought is only a part, you see, and coherence is in the whole, but it includes the whole process, right? And the process of the mind and so on, now, which includes the tacit process of thought. Right? You see, so what counts, any change that really takes place has to take place in the tacit process of thought, right?
Yeah.
It cannot take place in the abstraction.
Tacit means that which is believed.
No, tacit means that which is unspoken, which cannot be described, right? Like the tacit knowledge in the bicycle riding.
Is the actual knowledge or something?
That's the actual knowledge, you see, and that may be coherent or not. If you don't know how to ride the bicycle, it's not, right? Not in the context of trying to ride it, right? You don't get the intended result. You see, the incoherence becomes clear that you fall, right? And when you want to ride. Now you know physically that's where it's coming from, and that the change physically depends on changing the tacit response. Or see, changing the map is a step abstractly, but unless it changes the way the body responds, it won't do anything, right? I mean, you could say, well, you're turning in the wrong direction, you should turn in the direction you're falling, your instinct is making you turn the other way. That would all help, but eventually it's got to come into the tacit knowledge, which you get by actually writing it and you're sort of correcting it. There's a movement in that tacit knowledge, which is that it's sort of exploring all possibilities, and when it moves in and finds a result which is in the direction you're aiming for, it just it goes in that direction some more, right? And then that's the way it learns, huh? Until finally you find yourself riding it, right? Now, you may be guided then by the abstract map, but it's got to do something like that too, right?
Yeah. Okay. Is the tacit response abstract or concrete?
It's concrete, you see.
The bike's pretty immediate.
What?
Immediate feedback.
Yes, it's immediate feedback in the concrete, right?
Now, what I was thinking about, how do we do that with other types of thoughts, you know, where we make the intellect a map? Can we also do that other than bike riding? You know,
yeah, well, that the question is, can we do this in thought as well as in bike riding? You see, if we could do it in thought, then perhaps we'd get somewhere, you see. Something would happen. You see, that the... I'm proposing thought is to think is actually a tacit process, even more subtle than to ride the bicycle. Hmm? The concrete process of thinking is very tacit.
To explore that, would it be incoherent at first?
To what?
To explore tacit think, whatever.
Response.
Would that be incoherent in the same way that it initially? Riding a bicycle, there's an... I don't know how you're using the word incoherent. Can you have incoherence outside of thought?
Yeah, well, see, if your intention is to ride the bicycle, your muscles are not don't know how to ride it, you see.
Okay.
And therefore you fall. So therefore the whole response is not coherent to the end in view, right?
So in the same way that in learning tacit responses or thinking or thought, it would be incoherent initially.
Yeah.
Or may it continue to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
We expect when you're riding the bicycle and you don't know how, you're going to start out incoherent, right?
Right.
We'll expect the same in thought.
Yeah.
You see, not that we are surprised to find ourselves being incoherent, right?
Right. Mm.
So how do we get this feedback?
Well, that's what we want to discuss. Now, I wanted to say a few more words, say, about the body first. There's a quality there called proprioception. It means self-perception, right? Proprio means self, right? Now, if you move your body, you know, you're aware immediately you've done it. It's not kind of conscious cognizance, but rather it's almost unconscious, but you know it, right? Hmm? That you have moved it, not something else has moved it, right? Hmm? And it's not a knee-jerk reaction either. You know that you know that you didn't do it, right? Hmm? Between your impulse to act and the act, there is an awareness, right? Or between the intention and the act, whatever. Hmm? Now, that is necessary for survival. If we didn't do that, we would be not viable, right? Hmm. Because we couldn't tell the difference between things outside and inside, you see, originating in different ways. Now, like, we knew two cases. There was a woman we knew who suffered a stroke, apparently, in the middle of the night while she was sleeping, and her sensory nerves were damaged, but not her motor nerves. So she was able to move, but she couldn't tell she was moving, right? So when she hit herself, she didn't know it was she that did it. So the automatic assumption was somebody was hitting her. It was dark; she couldn't see. So then she would defend herself, and of course the attack increased. You see that without being the main point is you have to know that when you make a move, you know what the result is, right? Immediately, without thought. So that there's no time lag in the feedback. If it takes time, it won't work, right? If it takes a lot of time. So this is essential for survival. Now, it's built into the physical movements of the body. It can be improved by athletes and dancers learn to make it better, right? But it's not perfect in anybody because very many of your movements, you're not aware of what you're doing, you see. But still it's there, you see. Now. What about thought? Could we have proprioception in thought? Does you have the impulse to think, and then thought occurs, and all sorts of things happen, felts occur, the body gets tense. You don't see the connection now, right? It's like the woman who did something and said, I didn't do it, somebody else did it, right? Now that's all the difference in the world to get that wrong. Well, could we have proprioception in thought? Now, see, the woman did something with the body, but then because the sensory nerves weren't working, she immediately felt that she didn't do it, right? Somebody else, it was automatically assumed somebody else did it, and that made it an attack, right? Now, suppose you think, well, I don't know, I can't, what a terrible person he is, I can't stomach him, you see. That thought might be almost automatic, you don't even put it in words, but you get a pain in the stomach, right? You say, something is wrong with my stomach, you see. I must take a powder for my stomach, right? That's a failure of proprioception, right? In thought. Or you get a pain in the neck. People usually know that what the cause of that is. You see, or your heart may change, or different things may happen. You see, now. Also, your emotions may arise as you think of that person who hurt you and didn't have due regard for you and so on. You say, well, I have deep gut feelings, you see, which are really must be so, right? You see, I forget the name. There's a device, you know, which enables you to check the skin resistance, you see. And it changes according to your emotional state, right? And you see, if somebody says something to you, about a couple of seconds later, this needle jerks, right? Right? Because it takes some time to work its way down and do all that. And you may not even notice that you had some sort of emotional reaction, but if you have a strong one, you will notice it too, right? But it works, right? That now, if it gets strong enough to be noticed, you'll say, I had a gut feeling, right? Now, he said something a minute ago or 3 seconds ago, but you didn't see the connection, you don't connect it, and you say, there is a deep gut feeling, which is a sign that I'm justified in being angry, right? You may have thought I'm justified in being angry, and that made this feeling, and then you say, here is an independent deep gut feeling, which shows that I'm perceiving something, which shows that my anger is right. Then you think again, and you get more feeling, and so on. You see, you have, therefore, without proprioception, you can't get this straight.
Now when you're using the word proprioception here, what you're saying, I think, is without some sort of a feedback mechanism, there's nothing that makes it honest.
Well, yes, that's right. It can easily go wrong because you then get a feeling, and in order to, if you get a good feeling, in order to hold it, you'll say, "That what a good feeling," and then... The message to the intellect is find a thought that builds it up, right? Which may be wrong. And vice versa, if there's a feeling the intellect doesn't like, it sends a message down saying change the feeling, you see, it says, there may be a feeling that this thought is wrong, and there's a message sent to the intellect, change the thought, or there may be a thought that the feeling is wrong, and it sends the message, change the feeling, right? Now this gets all confused, right?
What you're saying is you're trying to come up with something which will give me good information about what's going on.
Well, direct information, immediate, immediate information.
Information based on what is actually going on.
Yeah, as when you move your body, you get direct information that I'm moving, right? Even if you're not seeing, if you look, you know it's happening, but even if you close your eyes, you know it's happening, right?
Well, it stands now. What we're using for proprioception is feelings and emotions, but those are not appropriate because they're actually, that's the way I get the feedback.
They're coming up from felts produced by thought, but we don't see it happening. You see, it stirs up the memory somehow and we get something.
We need a more subtle or a more...
And a faster and more direct, sense, right?
Yeah, what would that be?
That particular response... There's actually no way of knowing whether or not it is a response based on reality.
Well, later you can tell, you can figure it out and say, I thought, I can see that it was my thought that did it, you see, but it's already very late, you see. By that time, everything is stirred up and you can't get it straight, you know. Now, you see, if you had a proprioception of thought, I mean, that's a technical word, you may not like it, but self-perception of thought, right? Self-awareness of thought. The thought is aware of itself in action, you see. And this, then you would immediately say, well, I thought something and I had the impulse to think And there came that feeling, right? It was directly and therefore, you know, that's all it means, right? Now, if you get a feeling which does not come from a thought, then it will be taken to mean some direct perception of reality, right? Which is correct if it were not produced by thought. Well, it would be correct. Any feeling which is not produced by thought is part of your perception, right?
Why doesn't the proprioception of the body, which is a big part of this thought mechanism we're talking about, operate? And how did that get separate?
It's more subtle. Thought is more subtle than the body movements, right? It's further in the brain and so on, right? So it could easily have got lost, you see. But let me suggest, for the sake of a proposal, right, that in the tacit process of thinking, maybe there is proprioception, just as there is in riding the bicycle.
But due to insensitivity, we don't see it?
Yes, because of literal thought says there isn't any. It says thought is not doing anything.
It's the view of thought that blocks its ability to see itself.
Yeah. See, literal thought says, I'm doing nothing but telling you the way things are. So the question of proprioception could never arise, right? Because I'm not doing anything to be seen.
So you're making two points there. One is that literal thought says that I'm not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
It also says I'm not doing anything right. Well,
more subtle. Yes, it's entirely up to you to judge. You see, this is, and then we're going to have to see with the idea that there is a self who decides whether anything is going to happen when you think. Do you see? In other words, literal thought has this picture implicit. I'm telling you what the way things are, but you're there seeing, listening to me, and you decide what to do, right? If anything happens, it's you who have done it, not me. Do you see the point? That's a very important point. We'll have to discuss that tomorrow. That's where the question of the ego begins, you see.
Can we do that again?
Yeah. Suppose literal thought tells you the way things are, right? Yeah. Now, the theory behind that is whether anything happens depends on you, who will choose whether to do it or not, right?
The self.
Yeah, the self. It says, literal thought tell you that fellow is a jerk.
Okay.
That's right. The way he is. It is up to you to decide whether you're going to react or not.
Okay.
But in fact, you have reacted long before. You can decide, right?
Are literal thought.
Yes, and literal thought really works. It's participating, right? If I say that fellow is a jerk, you immediately get the whole sense, and you're reacting, right? So the thought works before you can decide. But the theory behind it is that the thought does nothing, and it is you who decide what to do, right?
Do you get the thought that that fellow is a jerk, or do you feel?
You
that
feel
he's
it.
A jerk, and then afterwards, maybe you have
that. It works both ways, but there was a thought beforehand. He was a jerk. It went into the memory, and then it produces right away the feeling he's a jerk, and you see immediately he's a jerk. You see.
So as soon as you see him, you have the experience of a jerk.
That's right. That's what he is, and you experience it that way. And then the literal thought says, and you decide what to do with the jerks. You see.
What?
You said what to do with the jerk. What kind
well,
of
literal thought is implies that it is up to you to decide what to do with jerks. You see, it only says what the way things are. He is a jerk. You see he is a jerk. You feel he is a jerk. You think he is a jerk. And then you decide what to do. You see.
But that's literal thought.
Yeah, well, that's an assumption within literal thought, right, which the culture has built up over the ages, right? Well, nobody produced it by himself, right?
But could you go over the thing where you said that if something is not produced by a thought, then that is a direct...
Well, that's certainly our assumption that whatever... See, if you were in the jungle and you got a sense of danger, it might really be the first sense that you have perceived something and you get a feeling there's danger, and then you say, look, let me look more carefully. What is it, right? You see...
towards a person, what if we feel that being with a jerk in a room for an hour is the same danger as meeting a jerk?
You may feel that, you see, but we have to notice that thought has played a big part in it, right? Now, you see, if you sense something in the jungle, then it may be an actual fact that some sign is pointing out danger, which you can't point to, but it's there, right? And you begin to look more carefully, right? You're very aware. So therefore, that feeling of danger is part of perception.
In the jungle, it's quite clear. I mean, in society and everything, we've created such an incredible bundle of responses that it's not really clear.
Well, that's right. Much of it is thought. You see, now if you say that that fellow is a jerk and it's and so on, it's and all that and all that, which then you will respond that way and you will create hostility in him and back and forth and it will get very unpleasant, right? So you're creating a bad situation just out of that thought, right? Hmm?
I don't think we got that point clear.
What?
That, okay, you're in the jungle and you sense something.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't know what it is, but you're on alert.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's functional. I come into a room and I sense something.
Yeah.
But then all at once I've got a jerk in front of me.
Yeah, well, that's
the difference.
The thought has told you that is a jerk, right? I mean, I know that fellow. He's a jerk, right? And therefore, all the response is there very fast, right? You see, it didn't come from perceiving anything. It came from some memory, right? Now, you could be in the jungle and say, I remember this is a dangerous place, but that would be different from seeing the actual danger, right? It might be useful to remember it, but it's different, right?
Comparing the difference between physical danger and psychological danger.
Well, yeah, but what is the danger may be produced, in this case, by the thought.
But what if he is a jerk?
But yes.
Yeah,
but you see, you can't behave. You produce all sorts of responses you don't really want. It's incoherent. You see, you also say, I don't want to go and tell him he's a jerk. I don't want to make an enemy of him.
Let's say you walk into a room and there's a creepy guy there. There is a sense that this may be a fact, that it's not emotional, it's
yeah.
not judgmental. And if you go too far and say, that guy's a jerk, you may be interpreting one step too far.
Yeah.
But there may be actually
oh, yeah.
an accurate sensitivity to something's a little funny here. You know, maybe I'll just go
yeah,
out.
But then comes the thought in there which sort of is violent and it shakes the whole system up, you see.
It doesn't have to happen, though.
No, it doesn't, but it often does, right?
Yeah, most of the time it does, definitely.
Yeah.
I think we're missing the key point which you made a little while back, that the crux of this is that literal thought is an innocent tool
yeah.
which is providing information to
yeah.
you, to this self. Which
yeah,
is
that's right.
There.
The literal thought is telling you the way things are. You see, now, even to say he's a jerk is rather an abstraction. You see, it's not really accurate information at all. It doesn't help you. You can say, this is a fellow who is difficult this way, that way, and that way, and let's be careful. And,
yeah.
That's one point. But when you say he's a jerk, it has an emotional charge which
yeah.
gets in the way of all that, right?
Far,
yeah, and then the thought behind it is that literal thought is not doing anything at all, but just telling you a simple fact. He's a jerk.
Yeah.
David,
yeah?
You're saying then that in the natural state, as it were, in the jungle, there's this action that occurs, which we all need. It's very helpful for survival. But in so-called modern society, what happens is that the incoherence comes in. We tend to override the response of you know, getting angry or fighting or running away, which would be the natural releasing of that whole process. So we tend to jam the mechanism by overriding that.
Well, we more or less have to maintain civilized society. You know, we can't have that kind of thing going on, right?
But then what that does to the body then is create incoherence in the body.
Yeah. The whole system becomes incoherent and it all gets jumbled up and muddled and the thing goes wrong. You see, now we have to find a way of... Now suppose we were really proprioceptive about that, we would say, well, that whole response of the body would be sensed immediately and we would see that it doesn't have any point, right?
It seems to be something not quite clear here. When I'm in the jungle and I get this sense,
mm-hmm.
there's no image in there. It's you would almost say it's a reality. I come into the room and I get a sense of a person, and at that point there's still no image. But then once I go into the image,
yeah, but that happens automatically from the memory, right?
Yeah.
It goes very fast. You don't see the difference, you see.
You get the feeling, you create an image. It could be very difficult to just hold that feeling. That
yeah, you see, that would be a question of suspending the image. You see, if we could suspend the image, things would be very different. That image interferes with self-awareness of thought too, right? That image provides a whole image that's wrong, and it prevents you from looking at the thing that has to be looked at, right? You see it.
The closure that we make, that is the thing that kind of, the closure that says we know what's going on instead of allowing something to
happen. Yeah, well, that's what literal thought says. I'm telling you just the way things are.
Right. So this man has no chance to be anything but a jerk. Or he may or may not be, right?
Yeah.
So we made a closure, we said that's it.
Yeah, and it's also affected the whole system so that it isn't working right from then on.
Is it the error more fundamental? I'm telling you. So there's been a split, there's been some kind of separation.
That's right, but that's the deeper error, which is that thought is telling you, it is already implicitly supposing there's a distinction between me and thought, right?
Didn't you say a minute ago, that's what I was trying to get clear, seeing I still don't get it, that in tacit thought there is this point that the thought, the literal thought, and me are separate, right? Okay, that's one point that is confused, but it seemed that you suggested a minute ago that somewhere in concrete tacit thought there may be, within that same realm, active but covered, the proprioception that would clear it up.
Yeah. I'm trying to say that at the actual level at which thinking emerges in tacit process, I'm suggesting it's a movement, and therefore there, it could be, in principle, self-aware. See, I want to say movements of the body are, in principle, self-aware without a self to be aware of them. Now, maybe movements of thought are too, but the thing has got muddled up by all this other kind of thought and images and so on. Do you see what I'm driving at? That to show there is a possibility for self-awareness of thought, you see that if we take the concrete real process of movement of thought, it could be self-aware, but our attention is not on that. And also it's on a lot of other stuff that's getting in the way, right?
So if our attention is on the content, let's say we are in tacit thought and content comes up, if we get caught in the content, then we have sort of bypassed that whole possibility. But if we see the process, then we may not get stuck. We may have content come up, but we will not be caught by the content.
No,
we will see the process with content emerging along the way.
Yeah, we will sense the connection between the content and the process and the impulse to think, right? Or the impulse to do or whatever. You see, the action begins in some impulse or some intention, which, and apparently, according to Eccles, there's some neurological activity before we're aware of that. Yeah. And then it comes in, and so the impulse probably is generated from the whole, right? Yeah. And it begins to act. And if this, at the level of process, in principle, it should be possible to be, for that process to be self-aware, you see, not to bring in a self who is aware of it. Now, therefore, when the content appears, you say, well, that's content, right?
Yeah.
You see, if you think, if you know you're thinking and you make, I say, I've decided to think of an ogre, but it doesn't frighten me, you see, because I know that I produced that ogre by thinking, right? But if it happened automatically, I say, there's an ogre, it frightens me. Huh? And for a child, it may happen, right?
We're not talking about changing any of this stuff as much as we're introducing a kind of awareness that sees it all happen. Because to change any of it, like reactions, could distort the whole process.
Yeah, there's an awareness which is not a self-awareness without a self who is aware.
Would it be an oversimplification to say, as one might see the snake for the rope, you see the jerk for the human being?
Yeah, well, that's something like that, that after all, fundamentally, you have to begin with that he's a human being, and he's very, and some things we don't like about him, and so on. But you see, that image of the jerk creates hostility and violence and so on, right? It calls for it.
You talk about incoherence in thought as consisting of a conflict between intention and result. And I take it that when we have the thought of the person as a jerk, it is not our intent to have a sore stomach.
No.
But that is the consequence.
Yeah, nor is it our intent to make a big fight with him, and it may also be one or to spoil something that we want to do. So
when we make that instantaneous connection between that thought and that unintended result, what we have to do is either say, well, we want that result, we actually want the sore stomach, or we have to change the thought.
Yeah, but we can't because we don't see the connection, you see. We think that we're seeing a jerk in front of us, and that's the way it is, and we've got to respond to that. That is the fact we must deal with, right?
So we could speed up this perception of the connection between the thought and the and
yeah,
the
or
result.
Else, or else get rid of the interference. It may be that that's natural in the same way that the body has it built in. I wonder if the mind hasn't got it built into it. I mean, this is a suggestion, right? That in the tacit process, there is self-awareness. Now, that may be the very nature of mind. You see, now, I say that the essential thing is the body process is a movement, right? Beginning with an impulse and going on to a result. And you have a sense when turning, you know, developing, right? Now, thought is also a movement, you see. If it's a process, it's a movement. But thought doesn't treat itself as a movement. It treats itself as heaven, as truth, you see, as just being there, telling you the way things are, right? Mm-hmm. Thought is a movement, right? And therefore, perhaps it's self-aware, now, in principle. And except that all this muddle is going on so that it can't work, right? You know, like the lights of Las Vegas prevent you from seeing the universe, so you might think they're the most important thing in the world, right? Because they're so powerful, you know, and they fill your consciousness. Huh? See, so something very subtle may be far more important.
Don't you think certainly if you're attentive enough, or whatever it is, sharp enough to see this activity, you're not going to be worried about whether the guy's a jerk or not?
No, if you really see this, you'll say it's not terribly important anyway, but the trouble is that the whole history and the vast number of programs on there jump automatically into operation, right?
If I'm that attentive, I will go into the room and I'll see that I'm the jerk.
Well, you see that whole behavior is also a jerk, right? You see, so the point is now, but we don't have that attention because see, somebody could say, if I were only attentive to the stars, I would see something of the universe. But suppose these lights are on, you see, are filling the whole area. So we've got to turn them off somehow.
It's this whole activity of
the lights of violence, do you see?
It's this whole activity of thought that keeps it from seeing itself.
Yeah, it creates a disturbance, noise, violence, light, you know, flashes.
See that in the body when a person gets drunk or takes drugs and stuff, this proprioception doesn't really operate. They can injure themselves and not be aware of it and have movements that they have no control over.
Yes, and I think leprosy is of that nature that the nerves get deadened and that person doesn't know what he's doing and he actually damages himself because he exerts too much force, you see. He's too violent, really. And all the troubles of leprosy come from the overuse of power by the person who has it, because his nerves are not telling and don't give him the pain that he should get. He's not proprioceptive, you see. Well, that has been finally demonstrated, I think, by people who study the disease.
We come back to this sensitivity that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Sensitivity is the process of undoing all of this terrible energy that makes it so we can't see.
Yes, we have to become sensitive to the violent process which is creating insensitivity. And now, to change this intellectual map opens the possibility, you see. You see, we had already, whether we like it or not, an intellectual map which distinguished muscles from thought, right? So, okay, muscles may be, muscular movement may be proprioceptive, but thought, that's very different, right? Thought could never be aware of itself, right? Thought, and in one sense it can't be, not in the sense of the abstraction, right? But in the sense of its concrete actuality, a process, it could be, you see. Now, it is a movement, and you see, movement is a very subtle affair too, you see, that we have a friend who has been had a degenerative disease from childhood, and so he can't move, has almost no movement, you see. And yet, apparently, he teaches movement, you see. The question is, you see, how can he do it? He, at university in Tel Aviv, I think, there he teaches movement. He's, you know, so in other places as well. Can you sort of get a feeling for how could he do it?
What do you mean he teaches movement? Like a dance class?
No, not exactly. He teaches some sort of essential features of movement. In other words, he teaches something to people which helps them in their movement.
Like theory of movement?
No, no. Sensitivity probably, you know, I mean. See, in other words, the beginning of the movement, the impulse to move and so on, has a structure which he can work on even though he can't move his muscles, right?
The impulse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's the essential feature, right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, we don't pay much attention to that. And see, that's my guess anyway. So that that there is the impulse to move and there is the movement, right? Now, when we don't understand our muscles very well, as we usually don't, then we can't really connect those very well, right? Now, see, in general, we can't move our fingers individually and so on. We can't get the right impulse. Somebody who's trained in piano playing gets it, right? You see, so now if we have an impulse to move which is not very sensitive, then it will create a movement which we don't know too much about. And at least we'll know it is a movement, but it has become so insensitive with thought that we don't even know it.
Behind thought.
An impulse to think, right.
To think, and if we could just hang in with that impulse, we might catch it.
Yeah, did you ever have the intention to think, right? I mean, how can you describe it?
Well, say that, I'm going to think about something.
Yeah, okay, but it already expresses the fact that you have the intention, right? But I mean, what made you say it?
I don't understand something.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I don't understand something that made me say it. But then there was a kind of impulse that was in there. Say, I don't understand, therefore I'll think, right? Mm-hmm. And there was an impulse that got you thinking. Like there's an impulse that got your hand to move, right? Suppose you say, I want to reach this object, so I must move my hand, right? Therefore, I have an impulse to move, and it moves. Huh? And I know that that all happened immediately.
So there can be no thought without the impulse?
I think there must be an impulse to think, unless there is the thought which just responds automatically out of habit, right? I'm saying the thinking process certainly requires an impulse. Probably there is a more subtle impulse that stirs up thought, too, but I mean the past, right, from the past.
So the impulse to move, for instance, out of the
path
of the car,
yeah.
You can fairly sense something like that. But you're also suggesting, if I understand you right, that there's a thought that gives rise to the impulse to move.
Yeah.
That is probably more subtle. Mm-hmm. But still, you're suggesting you could apprehend that as well.
Yes, and now that impulse may arise either from perception of the necessity, or it may arise automatically from the program, right? Or some mixture.
But in either case, you're suggesting that it may be possible to actually sense in some way, from some capacity, the impulse to think.
Yes, that's a thing you could try. You see, you do know you get started thinking, and you say, I must think, you know, so that is expressing an impulse to think. So it seems reasonable there must be an impulse to think that led you to say that, right?
The actual verbalization imply what you're saying, so you begin to talk about that.
Yeah, well, you say, I must think, it suggests, if you say, I must drink water, the impulse arose out of thirst, right?
I guess what I'm asking is, does the verbalization have its sourced in that same
impulse. Yeah, well, the verbalization expresses, in this case, may express the impulse, right?
It
helps to define it at the same time, right?
I can imagine, or more than imagine, the impulse to watch the process. But to actually catch these automatic thoughts is, boy. I mean, there will be an impulse to catch them as they've already happened. Mm-hmm. But before they arise,
we may be making it too difficult, but I'm saying, see, the first point is just to look at it. I'm trying to say we're not answering it, but sort of feel around, right? No, that may be too difficult, you see, but it may not.
There would have to be a place of non-impulse first.
Well, what, suppose you say, what about the impulse to, you feel uncomfortable, you get up, right? Now, you may feel uncomfortable and you decide you've got to think, right?
Where am I getting uncomfortable from? Is the place that was before uncomfort?
Well, you might discover that something requires thinking. You see, there's a problem, as an example.
All I'm saying is that this impulse to think must arise from the non-impulse state, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, at first you have no impulse to think, perhaps, or relatively little. And then
we don't have that non-impulse thing. Our thinking is running all the time.
Yeah.
Then maybe not. Are you sure?
I'm not sure of anything, but I'm making the statement to see how people react to it.
Yeah, I would wonder. It may appear that it's going on all the time, but maybe it's not.
Well, that's what I said. Non-impulse would be not happening.
You see, you may catch yourself thinking about something suddenly and find there's some feeling that's making you want to do it.
Yeah, so where that sensitivity that you're referring to yesterday and today would, again, how I'm understanding it is, it would be in that area of the impulse to watch, where the proprioception comes, I can sense the impulse, but I don't think it's important to have to see where all the thought, the images come up. I don't think that's where the importance is. It's the impulse or the process.
Mm. Yeah, we have to be aware of the impulse and the connection to the consequence, right? And the impulse to move the hand and the movement, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now,
David, what is the impulse that's even behind that? I mean, why even be aware of that?
Why?
The disorder that exists.
Well, simply, we want to begin to see if we can find proprioception somewhere. You see,
I understand that, but I'm saying why even want to take that step? In other words, isn't that an impulse?
You may have an impulse to take the step as well. Yes, because we have talked about it for a while and we see the importance of it, we develop an impulse, right? That's the way things always happen, right? I mean, you don't decide you're going to do it, you see, consciously. The impulse is born in ways you can't, it comes from sources you can't specify. And as Eccles showed, it probably works before you're conscious in the brain. And then it appears and you become conscious of it. And a little later, the results come, right? And sometimes they come before you're conscious, as Eccles showed. And then, just simply as a kind of exploration, you could say, let's see if we can see this process. You see, it may not do anything, I don't know. you see, it seems to be relevant.
As our thinking functions now, usually, it would seem like it's almost as if it's an automatism, which it occurs. And I think you may be suggesting that if we have the interest in it, if we start looking at this thing and it slows down, it's possible that in some instance it's on its own nature, or the way in which it arises all by itself, so to speak, might become visible.
Yeah. You see, you might find yourself getting into a train of thought which you say I shouldn't be getting into and so on, you see, but you say, how did I get in it? And you might find there's a certain feeling which gets you going, you see. And then it sort of stirs up, that sustains the feeling, right?
Yeah.
Right, there might be some little stimulation which you're quite unaware of.
Yeah.
And the thing
pussy comes out of there.
Is this impulse going to be aware of itself? Is there another place that
the
impulse?
It's something even more subtle, you know, that might be aware of itself. This is some of the information which enables us, the mind, to get into it, right? You see, the connection between the impulse and the act, you see, is, but the awareness of that is probably in the tacit process, right? You see, the movement itself is being produced in the tacit process, which ultimately we are not conscious of, really, right? But there are various things, subtle cues in what we can be aware of, which direct in ordinary consciousness, which help move us in that way, right? You see.
The next step past the tacit?
The impulse is already a slight explication of the tacit, right?
Okay.
Yeah. It's not reached anything like verbal or thought or anything like that.
It's not part of the tacit.
Well, it's the unfoldment of the tacit, right?
Mm-hmm. How would you describe the impulse to think that somebody is a jerk?
Well, that's part of it. You see, it must be part of the background of your thought that, such and such behavior means he's a jerk, right? Now, the point is that you might find you want to think that. I don't know why, you see, but it's a habit. It feels more comfortable thinking that, you know, there's an impulse, or he annoys you and you can get back at him in your mind that way. You know, all of that sort of thing may give rise to an impulse, right? You see, it's very subtle that a certain kind of discomfort may give rise to an impulse to think something that will relieve the discomfort, just as it may lead you to move the body to relieve the discomfort. Your body is uncomfortable, you get an impulse to move in the direction of comfort, right? So you may get an impulse to think in the direction of comfort or security or whatever it is.
Away from discomfort.
Yeah.
It's almost as if there's a thought process on top of a thought process, in the sense that I'm looking here, and in some sense that's a thought process because I can function within this room. And then one particular thing that was looked at calls up the feeling, oh, this isn't quite right. And that isn't, but it isn't known that that second thought process is.
Yeah, well, yes, among the things that make it difficult is that the thought process may be literal and just say, I'm telling you only the way things are, there's nothing to look at, right? You see, you have to realize the participatory nature of all thought, right, to make sense of doing this.
Rationalization?
Well, rationalization is participatory too, but it won't make, if you suppose that thought does nothing and you do everything, then there's no point in raising the question at all of proprioception, right? You see, thought itself has a theory about how it works, which is misleading and implies there's no need for this at all. Is that clear what I mean?
It implies what?
There's no need for self-awareness of thought, right? Because thought isn't doing anything anyway. You're doing everything. Right? Now, you see, we begin to realize we are not doing everything. It's happening like the weather, you know. It's being done to us by. Right? And there's a lot of resistance to that, if you think of it, because we like to believe we're doing it, you see, at least some of the time. You see, so therefore, at least a large part of things is being done to us, and maybe in thought just working that way. And even the thought which is correct has that nature, that it's a movement, right? And therefore, it's not truth, you see. It's not something transcendental or anything like that.
I'm concerned about cause and effect here. You say things are happening to us, or yeah, we're not causing it to happen. But I'm getting back to the example of the thought, I don't like this person, and the resulting bad feelings in the stomach. There, that is, the thought gives rise to the physical problem.
Yes.
And that is something that we have in fact done that to ourselves, because it's our thought which created that.
Yes, we have done it in a way.
and I'm just, you know, I'm also I'm thinking that the need to look for this initial impulse, the need to be aware of all of this, arises out of this incoherence. I mean, if we were functioning perfectly and coherently all the time, and our intentions, everything we intended always came about, I guess there wouldn't be any compelling need to explore this.
But we know that thought cannot do that because it's incomplete, right?
And the way at least I think I become aware of incoherence is being aware of the physical manifestations, the pain,
yeah.
And I'm just wondering whether the solution to that, whether all this search for this initial impulse necessarily is going to have to be retroactive. In other words, you're already past the impulse, you've got the bad feelings, now you got to go back and...
No, you don't have to. That's the point. You see, you might think that's the way, but it's the bad feeling regenerates the impulse to think some more. Mm-hmm. So you're always doing it, you see. It's like a stream which has a source and a source where it's beginning and an end where it's flowing out, right? You see, rather than going back to the past, you see, that cause becomes effect and effect becomes cause. It's it's reciprocal causality and not linear causality.
But if I'm conscious of the fact that I have that I have created this discomfort in myself,
yeah, but
because of some thought I had or about this person.
Well, you didn't do it intentionally, you see. It was some sort of automatic process that you're not aware of what you're doing, right?
But is it possible through thought to discover that that's what I have been doing and to change?
No.
Well, that's a delicate question. We'll have to go into that carefully tomorrow, what that means. But the quick answer is that's not that simple, right? But you see, the first thing is that we don't just simply have cause and effect, right? But the effect becomes the cause, a similar cause, and the thing, they keep each other going, right? Like the Israeli, the Jews and the Arab nationalism. And you can't break into that cycle, right, directly.
You cannot?
No, not directly.
Oh.
You see, you can't just say, I'm the cause and I'll change that.
Oh, yeah.
You see, I'm also the effect. I'm both, right? You see, you have to get beyond that division of cause and effect as you get beyond the subject and object. You see, you have to get beyond some of these divisions that thought is bringing in all the time.
But like this fellow said, and this is how I experience it, there will be discomfort, and that will create an impulse to watch the process doing its thing.
It doesn't. That's been happening for thousands and thousands of years, and it didn't do it, you see. I'm saying it's only when we call attention to this by a careful looking at it and see the meaning of it that the impulse may arise. You see, people have been suffering this for many thousands of years, right, and didn't look at it because they accepted the superficial way thought was presenting it, that this is the way things are, right? Now, see, we have gone into this very carefully and have given another meaning to it and says it really means that we're doing something pretty stupid, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, that will give rise to the impulse to change it.
In a sense, you're saying we're making a new context,
yes,
which allows for a different...
Yes, ordinarily people don't think this is stupid at all. They think it's just the way things are. It's what everybody does, and it's inevitable, and that's the way it should be, right? Hmm.
Impulse comes first, before.
No, you see, we have been making a long and somewhat intellectual analysis, and showing that by inference, what we have been doing is pretty stupid and not really necessary. And if we don't want to go on doing it, then we will begin to get an impulse. We would like to stop this, right?
Right. Okay.
This is the point I wanted to ask. So the impulse isn't simply to save one's own neck.
No.
Because that hasn't worked.
Is no.
Is that
yes, it's an impulse that this is pretty unintelligent and destructive and unnecessary. And very naturally you begin to say, well, I have an impulse that we must, it would be good to change it if I could, right?
But to take that further, I ask why.
Well, I don't want to do all this stupid stuff and get in all this trouble. That's one simple reason. I'm missing a great deal. Maybe I'm missing the real meaning of life. You know, all that.
So is it a self-interest thing?
Well, in a way, yes. But you see, it's a sort of, if it is, it's a broader notion of the self. I'm saying that I am interested in coherence, and I see that this sustained incoherence which defends itself is stupid, right? Why should I go on with it if I don't have to?
We were saying for coherence is innate.
What?
We suggested before that coherence is innate.
Yes, except we're doing something that stops something stupid that stops it, right?
Well, if something's innate, it has a tendency to want to be that way over.
Yeah, we have a natural inclination to want to be coherent anyway. You know, that I think that's built into us. Well, maybe, but you see, I think we have this natural wish for coherence just as we want food, right? When we're hungry. Health or everything like that. And therefore, we have this, and we have therefore an impulse to begin to look into it to see if we can, if things will change, right? Mm-hmm. Say, we don't want to go on with all that stuff, and we don't have to. That's the suggestion, right? If we don't want to, but we have to, then we'd still, there's no way out, right? That's, many people say, I would like this to change, but there's no way, right? Therefore, they don't go any further.
Yeah, the way you described impulse, I have no question.
Yeah.
But then, this is moving along, and I see it's functioning poorly. And so in that, it's like proprioceptive. I see a bad functioning, and so it creates another impulse, or the same impulse, to watch the process.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, impulse is arising. As a result of all that we have been saying and seeing and thinking and feeling and so on, and that we're seeing how stupid this all is and how we really want something else, we have a new impulse. Right? But unless we had seen all this, there would be no way to get that new impulse.
Well, it's not really that we have a new impulse, but the impulse which we always have to not suffer.
That's right.
Is pointed in a new direction.
That's right. It's aroused and stronger and pointed. There's some possibility now of it's working, right?
Yeah.
Whereas suggesting that activity is taking place in that same tacit area.
Yes, it's in the same tacit area that all the other things are taking place.
What about the smoker who has the impulse because of new information that they received about cancer, and yet they
it may stop him, may not, because he doesn't understand all that we're talking about how his thought creates discomfort and the need to smoke. Do you see? It's a complex process of addiction, right? So we have discomfort, and one way to relieve it is by endorphins, you know, which could be gotten by thinking comforting thoughts. But suppose you've got used to relieving the discomfort by smoking. Then there's a feeling of discomfort when you think of stopping or when you stop, and then that gets so powerful it creates an impulse to smoke, right? So merely seeing the danger doesn't stop it. It may create an impulse to go further and say, I've got to go into this, right? If you merely try to oppose the smoking, it'll become a kind of violence. The right impulse would be to say, we've got to look into what's behind all this.
Talking about
Anderson, yes.
Is what we're talking about kind of zeroing in on what meaning is? I mean, changing.
Well, that's part of it. Yes, you see, it's a question of meaning and so on. The meaning is finally what determines the impulse, right? Okay. Well, I think that we are way beyond the time, and so we'll start tomorrow morning at the usual time, and. You might, as an exercise this evening, if you feel like it, try to find your impulse, some impulse, you see if you can...